Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. Welcome to Circle Talk, connecting pagans of all paths. Tonight, we start the new year with an encore presentation from 2019, where our host, Circle Sanctuary Minister Deborah Rose, welcomed Wade Mueller for a discussion about the need for infrastructure and the practical means of acquiring pagan land for a pagan homeland.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk will now be one of the shows featured on a new Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, or CSNP. The Circle Sanctuary Network podcast team have put together a lineup of rotating shows throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez, alternating weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I'll continue to be the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesdays feature a new show, Divining Dreams with Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursdays for Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. It's such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and I hope you try them all. Tonight on Circle Talk, we're featuring a guest who presented at PSG this year. I attended his thought-provoking workshop and knew he'd be a great guest for Circle Talk. His name is Wade Mueller, and he presented Pagan Homeland. Wouldn't it be great to have pagan events on pagan land? What about temples, groves, and stone circles across the country? Pagans have always been a people of the land, and wouldn't we love to see this path move forward? We need to have land and buildings all of our own. So tonight with Wade, we're going to talk about the infrastructure and some of his ideas and practical means that we can do that. Let's hear a little bit about Wade. Wade has been a pagan since 1992, and he identifies as a Tearsman since 1999. He founded Deeply Rooted in 2000. Deeply Rooted is a 160-acre pagan sanctuary intentional community. Also in 2000, Wade began doing prison ministry work, and he now provides pagan ministry to 12 institutions. On a personal note, Wade is an avid reader, and he is a librarian for the Deeply Rooted Library, which has over 6,000 books. He considers himself a wannabe blacksmith and beekeeper. Other fun facts about Wade is he's a vegetarian, a home brewer, hoards amber, and hates mushrooms. It's going to be a fun and informative night. Welcome, Wade, to Circle Talk.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Hey. So you've identified as pagan since, so did you grow up, were your parents pagan? Did you grow up in a spiritual home?
Sort of. My mom was if the phrase works, a hardcore Unitarian. So she was she took us to Unitarian Universalist Church fairly regularly, and so we learned all sorts of stuff. But she was militant about not forcing religion on people. So that delightful thing gave me kind of a depth and breadth of spiritual understanding to work from. And then when I got older and got interested in earth-based spirituality, I was really interested in Native American stuff because I was the closest I knew of, in my ignorance, right until I realized I wasn't Native American. And so I started casting around for other stuff and found paganism and then pretty quickly Northern European heathenry. And I've been there ever since.
All right. So tell us just a little bit about, you founded Deeply Rooted. Tell us about Deeply Rooted, because it sounds like it was your first land project.
Yes. It's a 160-acre parcel that we have. It's almost the dead center of Wisconsin, about a half hour northwest of Wausau. And we're way out in the middle of nowhere down a gravel road, just pretty about as rural as it gets. And it's unfortunately a little low, so this season where it's rained a lot, it's a little squishy. But we've been out here for about 20 years now, and we've established a tribe, a community of people who know that this place they can always come to. It's always going to be here, It's owned outright by the church. We're a 501c3R, you know, religious organization. We have all the proper bells and official whistles on us. And we manage the property as both a sanctuary, so pagan folk can come and just be here, do whatever they need to do. We have stone circles and oak groves and hemlock groves and 120-year-old apple tree, the 6,000-book library you mentioned. We are off-grid, so it's very rustic. So it's composting toilets, stove, and limited solar. So there's that. But for people who come out here, they tend to like it. And it's honestly, the biggest problem I have promoting the place is convincing people that it's real. As people are always talking about.
I mean, 160 acres is a huge bit of ground.
Yes, we're a half mile square, so it's a big chunk. And it's really interesting is we butt up against another 100 acres on our back. And then just beyond that, one of our members that joined about a decade ago happens to own another 120. So eventually we're going to have about a square mile's worth of a property that will be all pagan.
That is so fun. So
yeah.
What got you interested in acquiring land and create? Do people live at Deeply Rooted on the land?
Yes. Currently three adults, one child. We've had as many as, I'd say, we've had as many as 10 people living here full time, and as few as just one or two. And so it ebbs and flows over the years.
What started in thinking about creating Deeply Rooted and getting land?
Ever since I first got into, even before that, I mean, when I was a kid, my spirituality was always based in nature, in the actual woods, and that was always my spiritual home. And when I got older and started reading books, everything talked about it being a nature-based, an earth-based religion, spirituality, whatever you want to call it. And all the practices were about, I mean, in all of our great books, are about doing things outside, about having our land that we did things upon. You know, we do a harvest because, well, we're harvesting food off of the land that we own that we're going to be eating this winter. We celebrate the planting season because that's what we're planting. We do sacred hunting on our land. That's what all of our book, all of our history, all of our lore have always been about. And then when I looked around to the modern pagan movement, it was people meeting in coffee shops and in maybe parks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, this is nice, but when are we going to get our own space? And then casting around this, there wasn't a lot of places that were actually doing that. That's why Circle Sanctuary is so fascinating because, like I said, being one of the oldest, most well-established pagan groups out there, I think a huge part of that is because it is a huge chunk of land, and that provides a solidity, a base that you can't compete with. It makes us who we are, and without the land, we're just kind of wanderers and nomads, kind of picking up whenever we feel like it. Plus, we don't have any reason to really resolve differences or sacrifice personal ego if there is anything to sacrifice for. I mean, if you just have an online group or a group of people meeting in the coffee shop, you have a disagreement, it's like, well, forget that. Yeah. But if you have land or a temple or a grove or a stone circle that is, you know, collectively owned by the community, that's worth sacrificing for. That's worth making the effort for. And I truly believe that if we want to get to the next level of paganism, we need land. We need permanence because right now, we're an ever-growing. Our numbers keep going up, but our depth and our infrastructure hasn't seemed to materialize. And historically speaking, that's a rather dangerous place to be. And you know, religious and spiritual and political and social movements in the past have gotten to this exact point and disappeared.
Besides Circle, I know, can't remember if he got land. I know he tried. Are there any other pagan groups that you know of that have acquired land or a significant part of land?
Oh, definitely. Just here in Wisconsin, there's Deeply Rooted. There's Sweetwood Tenemos over by Lafarge, Wisconsin. I think they're technically listed as a religious spiritual campground. There's Atchington in northern Minnesota, about an hour north of the cities. And they're a school or an educational center with a pretty solid pagan focus. They're not exclusively pagan, but they're very pagan-friendly. There's Roots and Runes, which is just a starter community in the UP of Michigan, just across the Wisconsin border. And let's see. Oh, God, I know there's one more, and it's going to kill me the second I remember it. but there's tons of plays across the country, but I'm kind of focused in the Wisconsin, upper Midwest area. Myself.
Right. Right. So this is a movement that other people are thinking, hey, that we need to do it. When you acquired Deeply Rooted, because I do know that sometimes not all neighbors understand an earth-centered path, and towns get scared about the pagan word. Did you have any problem when you – tell us about the process when you acquired Deeply Rooted.
Well, for the most part, it was disbelief. I mean, and again, it's very rural, so most people have a very much a go-along, get-along kind of attitude. And when it comes up that you're pagan or witchy or Wiccan or whatever, 9 times out of 10, it's a furrowed brow, and it's like, oh, okay, and people just move along. Once we were here for about 6 or 7 years, there was some incidences. We don't have a sign out yet just because you know, not had a problem in a decade. We went through a fair number of signs that were vandalized or stolen. Mailbox got smashed up a fair amount. People would pull in the end of the driveway and just lay on the horn and, you know, yell things like, you know, come out and fight Jesus, you damn Satanist, and silly stuff like that. Mostly, and I'd say 19 out of 20 were just, you know, high schoolers being gomers,
Right.
And there's a few other things. One time I got particularly irritated about the sign being vandalized, so when I heard a car pull up, I ran down the driveway full speed and didn't have a shirt on, and all of a sudden I saw this a barrel come up from the car, and I heard a pop, 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 and then I got hit 3 times in the chest, and wasn't sure if I was shot or what, but the adrenaline was pumping. I ran out, got the license gone, and realized it was paintballs. But, that was a pretty exciting moment.
That's scary. So now they pretty much accept you, and it's not a big thing?
Yeah. One of our members, Shahara, is on the local town board zoning committee, and she does the election work there. We have people that work at the local CSA that's just a mile and a half from us, the community support agriculture place. We had kids going through the school system here, and so after a while, people just realized we're here to stay, and now no one seems to really notice nor care.
Absolutely. And we're just another spiritual group like anybody else.
Yeah, and I there was a few incidents in the beginning where some some miscommunications happened, so we got some. We got called the nudist camp for a while because when one of the well diggers showed up, one of our members happened to be walking around sky clad, and that got around. But in some ways, that was even positive promotion because you were like, oh, nudist camp, all right.
Yeah, there you go.
But for the most part,
you have outdoor rituals at your land.
Very much so, yes. We do all the Sabbaths, we do men's weekend, women's weekend. We'll sometimes do a Norse heathen weekend or a Wiccan weekend. The Upper Midwest Druids have met there. Different covens come here and do their stuff and just, come and go in the night kind of thing. We have a stone circle we've had for about 20 years. We've got a Celtic-style circle out in the woods in a grove of 100-year-old oak trees. We've had that for about 12 years. So we've got the Goddess Circle. We've got the Sophia Grove. We've got the Grandmother Apple Shrine around that 120-year-old apple tree. We've got the Ancestor Shrine, which we have the cremated remains of 3 of our elders in. We just got tons of stuff here.
Yeah, that's really, I am one of those pagans who meet in coffee shops. So when I first went to festivals, and I was mostly solitary, and then I've been in groups, and we just did not have the facilities to circle outside. And I remember that was one of the things when I went to festivals, and I specifically went to circle. It's really magical to be able to attend a circle and, call the elements and look up, and the elements are surrounding you. So
exactly.
Not TV. So, yeah. So, yeah, I, I encourage everyone to come to PSG, but to definitely, you know, try to circle outside or go to a festival or obviously get land, because it really, you don't know what you're missing until you actually do it.
Right. And it just deepens the experience in a way that you really can't articulate to somebody. They have to experience it. And then once you have it, you realize that, and all the stuff we've read about in our books, all of the legends, the lore and the myths and everything, they're real. I mean, the gods are real. The goddesses are real. Magic works. Spells work. And the fae folk are among us. And you don't get that in the basement of a library or in someone's backyard once a month when you remember to do the full moon. It comes from the deep connection to physical land, to truly being an earth-based religion, spirituality, whatever we call ourselves.
Yeah, and again, I think different strokes for different folks, and people can have all kinds of experiences, but I will say that, again, I'll go back to saying the first time when you're in the minister training program, you volunteer for something and you get volunteered real quick. And the first time I called a quarter, you know, there's 1,000 people in this circle, which is, it's just, it, I mean, you call a quarter, I mean, you're calling and you're surrounded by that element. You're right. It is very powerful, and that is not something that you can get unless you're outside. So it's really fun. So kudos to you that not only are you providing for yourself and your tribe, but that you open it up to, it sounds like it doesn't matter what the pagan persuasion is, that it's open to all.
Exactly. Yep. We've had some oddness over the years, but we figured it out. Again, there's a wide variety of diversity underneath the pagan umbrella, and sometimes it takes a little bit of adapting too, but we get there in the end.
Well, great. Well, tell me, as you, your workshop was excellent, and it was very well attended. Have you, as you've been talking about this, because I know this is one of your passions, have you heard a lot of interest? Is this something that people are interested in? Because owning pagan land is not something that I had really thought about until I went to your workshop.
It's one of those fascinating things that I live in the pagan subculture. I do the prison ministry work. Most of my friends and family are pagan, so I talk to a lot of pagans. And universally, everyone is like, "Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. We should totally do that." And then I said, great, well, here's the next step. And everyone's like, yeah, well, yeah, but, you know, I've got something else going on.
I want somebody else to do it, and then I'll come to their land.
Exactly. It's like the little red hen baking the bread. I kind of view it like that, which is, you know, that's just human nature. So I've yet to run into a single person that has said, well, no, we don't need temples. We don't need pagan law firms. We don't need food banks. We don't want to have sacred groves to do our rituals in. What the hell? The next person I run into will be the first. So everyone has this belief that, you know, obviously this is the next level. But if we want to go past the pagan 101 stuff, which honestly we've been doing for about 30 or 40 years now, we need to be doing something different. If we want something different, we need to do something different. If we want more, we have to sacrifice more. All of our traditions and practices point out there's no free lunch. Everything has a cost. Everything has a balance. And if we want land, if we want temples, if we want a place that anybody anywhere in the country can go to a Sabbat ritual or full moon ritual or whatever, whenever they want, that's going to take work. It's going to take effort. It's going to take great sacrifice. But it's worth it. Because how many people do we know are solitary, not by choice, but because they have no option? There's no place for them to go. And that's, I believe that's a failure of us. We need to provide that opportunity to those of our tribe, of our community, but honor the old gods and the old ways in whatever way they see fit. And to do that, we need to have permanence. Because we can't rely on people checking a Facebook page or a website and just knowing whose basement's going to be in next. We need to have the first pagan temple of Oshkosh and, you know, the grove of Wausau that everyone can go to.
Yeah. Because, again, in my study, there was a pagan slash New Age shop. I thought it was pretty harmless, but the people on each side of it, it was in a commercial area, and they had Sabbaths, and they had, you know, readings, and people could hang out, and they basically drove them out of business. And so, you know, like we said, people, they just rented, leased the building, and, you know, people, like, for a year went there for circle, and they went back one day, and it was absolutely gone. The landlord refused to renew the lease.
Yep.
So, in fact, he let the building sit empty for a while, for the time period. So, yeah, you're right. It showed me, you know, and I thought in this day and age that we had come past that. We had outgrown that, but but not. If you're renting something, you have no permanence.
I've been saying for years now, the two main weaknesses modern paganism has is money, we're terrible with money, and public relations. We've not figured out how that works yet. And the next, I mean, even this pagan homeland stuff, those are the two main things we focus on, that, you know, how to get money where it needs to go, because there is money in the pagan community. It's just we don't prioritize longevity. We don't prioritize permanence. We prioritize, you know, the fancy new robe or the cool new book or going to a festival, which I love festivals. I go to festivals as much as I can. But when you calculate how much money we sink into festivals, if we would just take one or two festivals a year and instead of having fun in community for a week, put that into a big old pot, every couple of years we could buy the campgrounds we're going to. And then have that stuff permanently. But we don't have that long-term planning, kind of just kind of that short-term individualism right now, and that's what's holding us back at the level we're at.
So have you been talking to any groups or people that you think might be interested in acquiring land?
Yes. Well, because the Pagan Homeland Project right now is a joint effort between Deeply Rooted and Ravenhof, which is a delightful kindred over in the Appleton area, the east central part of Wisconsin. And they're a large, well-established kindred. They've been doing a lot of good work for many years now. And that's kind of one of the reasons why we decided to work with them, because both of the groups have kind of name recognition if you've been around in Wisconsin for a while. And so the two of us working together means that the Pagan Homeland Project to fail, both groups have to fail at once. And that's just not going to happen. And so people can be a little more trusting of putting their money into the Pagan Homeland Project, because the money is held in trust by two groups rather than just one, and having, like, you know, one person wander off of the money, as I'm sure has happened in the past with other similar projects. But no, I believe Ravenhof will probably be the first group to apply for a grant of the Pagan Homeland Fund, because they've been looking at numerous properties over in the east central part of the state, and they're probably going to get like a 5 or 7 acre chunk of land and then build a stone wooden hof on it, which is kind of an old Norse drinking hall community center kind of thing. And
so
I don't know if we'll need...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. That's just my guess, and they've been kind of talking about that. There's a couple other groups that have expressed interest, but I don't think they're as far along as Ravenhof is.
Tell our listeners what the Pagan Homeland Project is, and about your grant, and just talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, the Pagan Homeland Project, or the Pagan Homeland Fund, we kind of use them interchangeably at the moment, is a, like I said, a joint account currently that is run through U.S. Bank by Deeply Rooted and Ravenhof, both with, like I said, all the bells and whistles and the official status and stuff. And it's up so that there's no wire transfers out, so can't lose the money that way. And that for any money to come out, there has to be a physical signature and a person that comes in from each group. So if we were to do a grant, and if both the groups were to agree to do a grant for whatever group, both of our groups would have to have meeting minutes saying, this is the person, this is the money coming out, and then they both have to go into the same branch on the same day. So we intentionally made it very difficult for money to come out, and we want to make it very easy for money to go in. And the main idea is that with that, people can donate any kind of money. It is tax deductible because it's under the legal umbrella of Deeply Rooted. So it's like just donating to any nonprofit or church. And it can be absolutely anything. We need a dollar, we need $1,000, we need everything. And anyone that puts in $5 or more goes down in the book. We're trying to avoid any sort of anonymous donations because we want to be as transparent and open as humanly possible. And like every event we go to, we bring our books in so people can go through our accounting and what's been donated, where, by whom. And the idea is, again, to be as open as humanly possible so that people are trusting that their money is going to a good place. And anytime that there's going to be an interest in applying for a grant, it's not a loan, it's a straight grant, they send a proposal, and then both the groups that are involved, so people in Ravenhof, would then have to agree. And then that group will get the grant. And obviously we're focusing on purchasing buildings. My personal ideal will be a church to turn into a pagan temple, but that will come true, but not right away. And other ways of doing it is if people have, if you happen to have a building or 10 acres off in the woods that's not being used and you wish to donate it, definitely contact us. And we've got a real estate lawyer and a, nonprofit handler for donations. I forget the official title. So we have people that can, we're able to be doing actual land and deed transfers. And the whole idea beyond that is if we do get a donation, we would then try to drum up local support for maintaining or building on that property and turning it into a piece of the homeland. And eventually, enough of those little drips and drabs of land and building across the state, we can start networking up, because Circle is awesome. Love Circle. Deeply Rooted is awesome. Love it. But that's not everyone's cup of tea. And up here, we can handle maybe 90 to 100 people for events at a time. And, we never want to have people just overrunning the spot. We want to have something like Deeply Rooted for everybody. And so that means we need to have 30, 40, 50 of these across the state. So a big part of the Homeland Project is for the existing groups that have land to work together to, funnel people one place to the other. So, hey, if this place doesn't work for you, maybe this other place. If that doesn't work, hey, maybe you should acquire some land in your area that we'll help you with, and you can build your own. And hopefully get to the point then where everybody has a place to plug in. But that'll be a few years down the road at least.
So when we first talked about this project, in your workshop, I was thinking, because I know Deeply Rooted, has 100, has all these acreage, and Circle has all this acreage. I thought it was land, but you just said you'd be interested in buying a small patch of land that has a building on it. So you're, tell us about that. You're real open on what you will sponsor.
At this point, anything the pagans are willing to own, to collectively own and make into something we need, we need it. We need people running a beekeeping shop out in the middle of nowhere. We need people running shops in towns. We need apartment buildings. We need old churches to turn into temples. We need open patches of land we can put stone circles on. We need absolutely everything. So at this point, there's nothing we'd turn down.
Yeah. As I'm aging, we need a pagan-assisted living.
Yes. Actually, there's a individual that owns an amazing parcel of land over in the western part of the state. He's still pretty quiet and not willing to go public yet, but by the gods, if we could talk him into joining the project, we would be off. And one of the things he was talking about was doing exactly that. He's got this huge chunk of land, and his idea was putting up tiny houses facing an inner circle. Each going there for retirement or assisted living, you could have your own space, but there'd be a lot of communal and community area so you could interact with other folks and nature. Plus,
right.
If you're not
along
with those,
help each other.
The work, yeah, and the work that Circle has done on the Green Cemetery stuff has really opened it up to the fact that other places can establish that too. And so we can have a retirement home that could also be a cemetery, a place to honor the ancestors.
Right. Oh, that's great. So tell me if our listeners or somebody's like, hey, I'm thinking of something, what is the process? Do they go to the Deeply Rooted website? Take us through the process from I'm interested to I get a grant.
Okay. Probably the first thing would be to contact myself personally, because I'm taking point on it. We're drawing other people in, but right now I'm kind of a point person on that. So my number is 715-574-5288. I'm offline a bit, so texting is probably the best way to get a hold of me. On Facebook, that's under Wade M. Otherwise, the Deeply Rooted Church Facebook page. Be careful, there's a couple others that are Christian, but you'll know us when you see us. There's the Pagan Homeland Project Facebook page, but right now we're just kind of using that for organizing. I haven't quite opened it up yet, but we will shortly. There's Ravenhof, which is also on Facebook under Ravenhof, which is H-O-F, and also ravenhof.com is their website. And also by email, if you're interested, it's deeplyrooted75, so DEEPLYROOTED, and then the numeral 75 at gmail.com. We're going to have booths up at, and we've had them at the Pagan Pride Days here in Wisconsin and Madison, Milwaukee, and the Fox Valley. We're going to have a booth and hopefully a workshop at Paganicon over in Minneapolis. And anyone that's interested, contact me through any of those things, and I'll start plugging in. I mean, we need absolutely everything. And honestly, the biggest thing is going to be money, because there is, you know, these buildings, unless we magically get them donated or someone wins the lottery, we're going to need to fundraise dollar by dollar and, you know, penny by penny. And honestly, I'm terrible at asking people for money. I was removed as treasurer of Deeply Rooted at one point because I wasn't collecting event fees for people like I was supposed to, because I just felt bad about being money off of people. So I'm not good at this part of it. So if there's any fundraiser out there who knows how to shake people down for money or ask in a way that they can get money off of people, I would love to talk to you. And beyond that, it's just a matter of if people are truly interested in this concept, stepping up and volunteering. We need everything from scouting locations. There's tons of churches that are for sale and pieces of land that are coming up on the market. We need people scouting those out and looking at them to see how viable they are. Like I said, we need fundraisers. We need people who can do tech support online. Pretty much any skill you got, we need.
So I turn in a proposal.
Okay.
And
oh, that's right. Sorry, the grant part. Apologies. Oops, sorry.
Go ahead.
What
was it? I said, so then they turn in a proposal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you approve it, is it a loan? Do I pay it back over so many years? How does that work?
Nope. The idea behind this is that if you are a pagan group and you've demonstrated your value and worth and your capacity to purchase land and to maintain it, it's a straight up grant. The assumption is that the more functional pagan organizations and institutions we build, that they will then, you know, feel honor bound to try to kick that money back into the fund once they get established.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of that'll be mentioned, but definitely not required. It's a straight grant that is given. It's a free association between pagan folk. That if all the groups involved, because eventually we want to be beyond just Deeply Rooted and Ravenhof. As groups, if there's any groups out there that do have 501c3 status or similar, let us know, and we'd love to. We'll talk about the idea of bringing you in on that. And the more people we have involved with that, of course, the more difficult it'll be to get money out, because each group that comes in will have to have a representative to sign off on it. But that also means that if we do approve a grant, you know, through consensus, it'll be something that everybody believes in. And yeah, so no strings attached. And so if you find, like, a chunk of land, it's, oh, my God, they got this, you know, church in downtown Chicago that's for sale, and we can get it for $50,000, and we're just $10,000 short, put a proposal in for the Pagan Homeland, and we'll see what we can do.
You know, it's interesting. Again, another person that I knew and was not in our immediate local area, but close, was, and again, she did pagan ministry, and a community of food and clothing bank and a community center was really her dream. And so she was able to get, you know, the kind of
house that, you know, the state will give you for a dollar and you have to whatever. But you said really struck home with me. After a couple of years, she couldn't afford to maintain it. So it wasn't the initial thing. It was the maintenance and, you know, what happens if the air conditioner goes out? What happens if the roof needs to be repaired? Is that something when you do grants that you help people with and look at and give people kind of an ideal of? Because I know, and again, she had a heart of gold, and she gave this everything, including her own personal money. But I don't know that she had the knowledge or the experience to understand what all the maintenance costs would have been.
Right, and that's why this has to be a collective effort. I mean, we can't just have one person running off with their dream and say, all right, we're all going to do it this way, and that can end badly because there's no way one person can do it all. You have to have at least a small community of people who are dedicated to this process, or at least people that know how to gather in people once the project gets started. Because, again, getting a house for a dollar from the state is a great thing. As long as you get someone in your tribe that knows how to do electrical work and plumbing and do air conditioners. Otherwise, it is gonna spin out. So one of the first things that a group would have to do is try to, you know, draw in those people if they didn't start with them. And currently, I mean, again, the account is currently at $5,467. So it's not like we're
High.
Yes, yeah, we got a good start, and it's not like we can say, all right, well, we'll give you maintenance money for 5 years or something like that. Right now, I think the focus is assisting on maybe just acquisition of land itself.
Right.
But,
and you would have to do maintenance yourself.
Yeah, and maybe down the road, you know, once it gets a little more rolling, that could be something we could revisit. But for now, I think the focus on is just getting the physical properties.
Yeah.
And part of that includes, too, that if people are interested in forming a 501c3, which is a vital part of this process, because it is amazing the protections that a church organization gets in terms of property and zoning. For those that are interested, read RLUPA, the Religious Land Use and Incarcerated Persons Act of 2000 and 2004. It is, if you're a church, a 501c3R religious organization, you have your bylaws and you have all the stuff in place, and you are functionally exempt from zoning. It sounds crazy. Don't believe me. Please look it up. But the protections that a religious church gets under the law is incredible. The way your finances are protected, liability, insurance, all these things, churches have it made in the shade in our country. So if anyone's truly interested in forming a pagan homeland project, owning, you know, property, you really need to be incorporated as a 501c3, and I'd be more than willing to help anybody go through their process.
And the LUPA 2000 law, which I remember in class you saying was a terrible law, but it's beneficial. As Wiccan and heathen and pagan churches, recognize those?
Yes, it doesn't delineate. It merely says anyone 501c3 organization. Like I said, in many ways, it's just a horrible law, but I really just people looking up and reading it themselves. And the case law is fascinating, but the first time it was tested, I think it was a Methodist church down Texas, bought up a suburb, bulldozed it, put up a parking lot in a mega church in violation of every imaginable zoning law there was, and under our LUPA, they were completely protected.
I was going to ask you, what do we care about zoning? And that
is a challenge. And here's the thing, too, because if you work with people on the county and the local level, if you do whip out our LUPA, you are pretty much giving them a big middle finger and telling them, ha, 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 you can't do anything. That's not a nice way to be a neighbor. Yes. And there are ways that even under a LUPA, state and local government could mess with you if you were a jerk about it by doing that. So our LUPA is kind of like the last ace in the hole that you want to use. It's there, but you never want to start the conversation with that. You want to be, again, because we're looking to be stewards of the land, we're looking to be as rational and reasonable and sustainable with the land we have, because we're going to live there. We're gonna die there and be buried and raise our kids there, so we want it to be good. There are some parts of zoning that are detrimental and non-functional for what we want to do. And currently, the law backs us completely as long as we're a recognized religious organization.
Wow. That is definitely good to know. So I remember, and I wrote it down in my notes from your class, something that I hadn't thought of, but that you said people can remember this project in their will. And I remember you said, what's going to happen to your property when you die?
Yep. And, I mean, again, like you mentioned before, the need for assisted living homes is because the first and second generations of the pagan movement are aging out. And folks that have land or property, a lot of times their kids aren't, you know, the same path they are, or they don't have them, or folks might want the land to move forward, or you could have had a stone circle on it that you use privately and you want it to be perpetuated.
Your children live in another state and they have no desire for that land.
Exactly. And so a lot of people are looking at the point of, you know, what happens to all the energy and the essence that I've put into my land over these years and decades. And yes, I'd love to see the point where we can start donating it and start building on it, making it instead of individually, collectively owned. And I keep using collective, and that sounds a little communist red, but I don't know what other word to use, because we can't have the land or the buildings or the temples be owned by individuals. It has to be owned by institutions, by organizations, because individuals can fail. Individuals can die. Individuals can go crazy. We have to have, and I know how much pagans love this, structure. We need to have organization. We need to have people that are willing to sit. Oh, God. We need to have people that we talk about true sacrifice and charging forward and dying gloriously for the gods. That energy, we need to focus on people that are willing to do accounting, that are willing to do writing bylaws, that are willing to sit through finance meetings. That's the sacrifice that we need to start getting from people, because that's what's going to move us forward. Having a temple is great. I mean, my vision has always been, there's this Oshkosh I'm obsessed about, but it's just this huge three-story building. You can easily do hundreds of people, dozens of rooms for different projects. And if we were to get something like that and get it going, you would need to have a permanent caretaker staff. You would need to have permanent financiers. You need to have an accountant that goes over your books every year. You would need to have infrastructure of people that knew what they were doing. And that's the sacrifice that we need to do in order to advance to the next level. And I like to believe, and I have faith, that our community is mature enough and wide enough and has dedication enough to bring those people and that amount of sacrifice out. I guess we'll see.
I know. I have in my note that you or somebody mentioned there's a lot of old Masonic lodges that they've rebuilt and that are just standing there.
Yep. They're a little pricey because they always built them big and they built them well because, you know, Masons. I've never run into one under, you know, a quarter mil. I guess I'd love to have one of those. There's actually one in Wausau. It's been up for sale for like 8 or 9 years. And their asking price is $900,000. And, you know, maybe down the road or you know, that lottery winner person. But, I think to get us going and to kind of prove to ourselves we can do it, we're going to have to start a little bit smaller. So, you know, that 5 or 10 acre plot of land that's not been used for a while gets donated or bought. The little county church that, those one room, you know, white-sided churches that are abandoned by the thousands across the country, buying up one of those and turning into a pagan temple, something a bit smaller that we can do proof of concept. And then I think that'll give us the confidence collectively and as a tribe, as a community, to then start biting off the bigger chunks.
Yeah. Well, again, I want our listeners to think about that and kind of look at their own groups and again, until I got involved with Circle, I had never, I've either been in a church or in with people who the only building that they had was their home. But again, that's just an individual building, not anything that was collected as a group.
Right.
So, and even being in a Christian church, if something falls out, they can ask you to leave.
Yep. And I think that another thing to think about, too, is that we have this weird kind of assumption of scarcity within paganism, that if one group does well, that somehow detracts or takes away from us, from the other group. And I think one thing for folks should really think about is just the idea of that any pagan group that acquires land or does well or that grows benefits us all. You know, we're all in this together. It sounds a little trite, but it's true. And so support any group that's doing any good work, and know that there's infinitely more demand. There's more interest in paganism and pagan stuff and pagan land and pagan teachers and pagan things going on. So we need 100 times more of everything we've got. So anything that anybody does, we need to support 100%. And start doing that, I think we can really start seeing things pop.
Yeah. And I think, again, I have met, pagan lawyers and doctors and engineers, teachers and professionals, but they tend to be very quiet. I think as you do this and it becomes more mainstream and more acceptable, then I think you'll see more mainstream people with mainstream professions that have lots more expendable income than I do be able to be interested in donating to it.
Yep, and that's the thing, too, because there's tons of pagan people with tons of money, even the poor among us, myself included. I mean, you go to a festival, it's $200-$300 just to get the party started, and you get 1,000 people showing up at something like that. It's like two buildings for this event.
Yeah.
So the money's there, it's just the priority.
Absolutely. Now, land ownership, is this ingrained in the spiritual path that you follow?
I guess it's paganism in general when you think about it. I mean,
yeah,
we've always been people of land, of geography. Even our names were based on where we were from.
Right.
You'd be, Bob from O'Perry or wherever, and it was, you knew where you were from based by your lineage and where you grew up, where you were, where your father's bones were buried, kind of thing. And I mean, people were, certainly nomadic to a small extent, but even then, migrations took centuries, sometimes millennia, to occur. Whereas for most people, they were in the same general area. They knew the land knew them. It sustained them. It fed us. It defined us. It shaped us. And now we're kind of in a space where we, let our Facebook preferences shape us and define us, rather than the fact that, the trees turn a certain color at a certain time of year, and that means it's time to, start split the kindling wood, or whatever we happen to have for traditions. We need to have that physical space again. We need to be people of the land, of the earth, and I think once we start doing that, we're going to see just amazing things happen. Like I said before, all the stuff we've read about in our books, all the stories we tell around the campfires, those times can and will come again. But in my perspective, it's only going to come down if we have our own land.
Yeah. And it's funny because, again, we consider ourselves nature-centered. And I have at times a very – so I go to work early and sometimes I work late to 8 or 9 o'clock. So in the winter – I go to work in the dark. I come home in the dark. Eat dinner and go to bed. And if I'm not careful, I will not notice the seasons change. I mean, I won't notice nature. And so, again, having somewhere that you go, and especially kind of forces you to be open to that. And I will tell you, when I do that for a while, it's almost, nature becomes almost like a drug for me, that I have to be outside. I have to touch the snow. I have to touch the tree. I get hurt. It's just, I need that connection. And so, again, that would be really nice. You know, if every major city, you know, had a 100-acre area that you could go and, you know, talk to people and, you know, who are like-minded without fear of any retribution or being, you know, criticized. So, yeah, I think that's a real, really, really exciting.
Yeah. And even for people that live in the urban environments, there's some that, just a fewer number, but there's still some for which, like you said, they don't see the turn of the seasons, they don't connect with nature at all. And for some, that's how they prefer to, that's just how their life is. But having a temple in town, you know, hopefully converted over a Christian church, in which, you know, effigies of their gods can be set up, or they can go and chant, or listen to drumming, or just light some incense and, you know, plug into the sacred for a while, will be just as fulfilling. And so having urban spots are really good too.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really excited about this. So how did you feel your workshop went? Did you feel like you got a good buzz? I thought your workshop was interested. Were you pleased with the turnout and the chatter in the class?
Yeah, I've done about the same class about 6 or 7 times now. Because this year is when I first kind of like launched off the entire idea, like kicking on for a while. And the response I get at every class, including the one at PSG's, is almost universally the same, in which everybody goes, well, yeah, that's a great idea. And then instantly there's this kind of like fog that comes in. They get a confused look on their face. The real world kind of intrudes, and they think, well, how can this possibly be real? Or I just can't see it. And so I think the vast majority of people are, again, I've not found a person that's been against it, but the idea of people stepping up and saying, all right, let's plug in, let's get this work done, it's in part, again, I might be stepping on some stuff here, but I think pagans have kind of given themselves a comfortableness with failure that is unhealthy.
Oh, don't even get me started on the poor pagan concept.
Yeah, and the people that join it because it's the most oppressed religion and I'm the most oppressed person, blah, blah, blah. And so I think we're very comfortable collectively with failure. And so we try things and they fail because they aren't supported, and then people go, oh, the pagan stuff fails. I knew it. Why should I bother? And so we kind of create our own dynamic there. The other part of it, again, I hate to say it, but it's a failure of imagination. Like, I'm talking right now, sitting out on my porch, I'm swatting a few mosquitoes, the crickets are going nuts. I'm watching fireflies dance across the thing, the sun just below the horizon, and the clouds are whipping by. It's the real world. I don't have to imagine. This is pagan-owned land that is going to exist far past when I'm dead, and I will be buried here, and hopefully I'll haunt the crap out of it for generations. This is home, and so I don't have to imagine. I don't have to visualize. I don't have to have a stand-in or a symbol for something that is sacred and meaningful. It's right here, right now. And I think for people that don't have that, I recognize what an amazing gift this is. And that's why I dedicate myself to serving the community, because I owe for this. But for people that don't have this, it's hard for them to truly believe that this is possible.
Do you have any fundraisers to get more money in your coffers?
Well, right now, just pretty much throwing out the idea of, hey, this is what we're doing, and we're going to be shaking you down for money at some point. And the way to do that, again, I'm terrible at raising money. Right now, my idea has been to shake a box or a bucket full of coins at people and say, hey, Pagan Homeland, give money. And it's working okay so far. But down the road, I think we need to focus towards the either larger gifts, the idea of convincing people that, hey, this is worth picking a couple hundred or $1,000 to,
or leaving
long term.
Yeah.
Or what?
Legacy giving, leaving part of their estate or leaving you money in their will.
Yes, that'd be fantastic as well. I think the way we're actually going to make it work is that the buy-in, though, idea of having individuals hearing about this stuff, having the conversations with these people, with each other, and deciding, yeah, you know, maybe I should cut back on my smoking, and I'll take half the money I save from cutting back my smoking, put it into a bucket, and eventually give it to the Pagan Homeland Fund. Or, boy, that robe is really nice, but $100 worth of land, that's better. And,
yeah.
Well, I'd love to go to that festival, but the $300-$400 I'd spend on that, we could buy a chunk of land with that. A small chunk, of course, but, you know, chunk all the same. And if enough people get to that point where they truly understand, can do this, I think it'll take off like gangbusters. But, yeah, when you go to the first hurdle of that failure of imagination and that assumption of failure within paganism and realize that, no, we can build a homeland just as glorious as any of the epic stories we read about. We can have, you know, places that are, you know, here there be dragons on the map where we get to send our children off to quest into. We can have that. We just have to be willing to do the sacrifice necessary to get there.
Well, Wade, your first podcast was fabulous. You were a great guest.
Okay, well, thank you much.
Thank you so much. I want to have you back. Please let me know if you get someone to be part of your project, or you buy a church or a house or land, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
That sounds fantastic. Thanks much.
All right. And again, before we let go, if people want to more information or to give, they can do it at deeplyrooted75 at, is it Gmail?
That's my email. Also, the webpage is deeply-rooted.org.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
And besides Wade, I'd like to thank David, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, October 1st. And we'll feature Tamara Von Forsen, which is the Witch of Oz from Australia. That's going to be a great show like tonight, so please come back. We'll now transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
One spirit in the dark, like a candle wavers. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community, a circle empowering you and me. A circle binds, yet sets us free, in the goddess name, so mote it be. One spirit
binds, yet sets us free. In the
goddess name, so mote it be.
Network podcasts presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.